everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the, you know, radio program that not only invites you but dares you to think outside the box of conventional thinking. And, man, it's beautiful out there, I can tell you. Little dicey at times, little spooky, but that's what it's about, discovering all that is available to us in the free thought zone. And, boy, it's much spookier inside that box, I'll tell you. So before we get started with one of my favorite subjects, of course, I'd like to just take a minute to honor Ted Kennedy, who passed away, and didn't always agree with him on all of his politics, but I believe a great statesman and a great, let's say, leader has gone to the other side. Come on, Ted, give us some support over there. Take a rest and then get to work over there. We need all the light workers. Very busy now. So that's for Ted. May the light surround him. And speaking of light, we're going to be talking about my favorite subject, well, one of them, the crop circle. You all know I'm an avid croppie, and in fact I was there this summer having all kinds of wonderful experiences. You know how I feel about it. You know I believe that these are communications from extra-dimensional beings, not to be confused with ETs. But, you know, it's splitting hairs anyway. What matters is really letting ourselves dive into the potential of knowing that we're not alone out here in our quadrant of the galaxy, in our dimension, whatever, however you perceive it. And certainly we're seeing something happening in these crop fields, something for me and for my guest, Suzanne Taylor. Very exciting. So we're going to dive into it, back into it today. Let me just tell you about Suzanne. She's got an interesting background. She was an actress. She became captivated with the phenomenon, not only of the crops, for goodness sakes, but all of the mysteries that surround us. Once you get on one, they all unfold before you. She did a film in 2003. What was it called? Suzanne, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. It was Crop
Circles. It was called The Quest, wasn't it? Quest for
Crop
Truth.
Crop Circles, Quest for Truth.
So. Quest for Truth. And
I was
your new one.
Executive producer of this film. It
executive
wasn't still
producer.
My film. Yeah.
And now we've got your new film out, What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. So we've got a lot to talk about. Welcome, Suzanne. Thank you for coming on Beyond the Matrix.
I love all the things you said. I thought listening to you, oh, she could be me, or I could be her, or you talk the way
yeah,
I
yeah, well,
and it sounded good. I liked it.
We definitely have a common thread. We people out
really?
There chomping around in the crop circle fields.
I like you saying extra dimensional beings, because that doesn't identify source. It just means it's not us, which is really the best way to talk about what this might be, since we really don't know where it comes from, other than it's not us, you know?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that tonight. I think that one thing that really sticks in people's mind is that ETs are swarming and landing and motherships and all of this nonsense, which may not be nonsense, but what I think is very important when we try to introduce people to the phenomenon of crop circles, and by the way, most of my listeners are beyond being introduced, so we can just cut loose here.
Sure.
But one thing to remember is that we exist on many layers of reality, and the physicians like Dr. Michio Kaku are now able to say that science agrees. It's a multiverse of realities out there. Finally, the science is catching up to the spiritual world, and
yeah.
We are really on the brink of so many wonderful discoveries. So why not embrace the idea that somehow we've got a merging of consciousness on many layers of reality, many dimensions. And let's get rid of the concept of the motherships and ETs, and I think together we're going to enjoy exploring that concept of extra-dimensional contact.
Great. You sound like me some more.
Well, good. Let's go together and just drive ourselves crazy talking about all the realities in a future moment. All right. Where do we start, Suzanne? Let's talk about your background. How did you get so deeply involved in the crop circle mystery?
Well, I was deeply involved in what broadly we might call consciousness. You know, how do we think and why do we think in such limited ways about you know, what we might call the scientific materialistic world, these external kind of observations about who we are, which is economic beings here to make the most money. And but this isn't right. The human potential movement came along, and I just got sucked right in to discovering all these other aspects to the sort of interior life. And my whole life became, you know, much more, it just changed. You know, it was no longer just living on some surface reality, but it was living in a much more dimensional reality. And then I've always been a kind of communicator. I've always, you know, I've been an extroverted kind of person, and always when I understand or like something, I always want everybody to understand and like it. So I had been an actress, which is kind of where I tuned into consciousness in the first place. It was even before the human potential movement started. And when the human potential movement came along, I went, oh, this is what we've been doing in my acting classes, discovering these interior realities. And we thought that maybe you could throw out a lot of psychiatry and send people to acting class.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, they would learn things in a much more useful way, in a way. I was producing all kinds of salon kind of programs where interesting people would come through LA and they'd end up in my living room talking about all these kind of subjects. And the crop circles became one of the subjects. But that one just enthralled me. And I was so fascinated by them that, you know, I went to England to see what was really going on. And more and more I thought, you know, the world needs a lot of radical change. We're not thinking the right way. We're going to hit the wall. In fact, we have in this thought pattern that we're in. And as we delve into all of these personal technologies for self-help and self-development, it takes a long time. We have to do it, but it takes a long time to, you know, get, for instance, all of humanity to make that kind of shift in their perspective.
Yeah, so we need something really big here.
I thought when the circles
jolting
came along.
For humankind.
Yeah, the circles could actually do it. They won't change you individually, but they'll change the collective thought pattern, which is what we need so radically while we're waking up individually. We're in the wrong pattern. We're in a self-destructive pattern. And, you know, now at least it's no secret. The world is in such economic difficulty now that everybody knows there's real big trouble. And so, you know, more and more I've become enthusiastic about what can I do to bring this crop circle information out, because it would change everything. If we knew we were not the only intelligence, if it was real to us instead of just science fiction, it would change our whole gross reality of our worldview, which right now just focuses on one another and is so violent. But if we knew that something outside of ourselves was equally, if not more, intelligent, then we're one humanity in relation to a much larger world.
I just want to interject. Go ahead. I have something to interject.
One humanity working together to figure out what in the world was going on, and that's what could save us. As someone in film says, that is actually what could save us. If we came into that alignment as one humanity, because once we're working together, we stand the best chance to solve all the problems that confront us, and how short-sighted we are to kind of marginalize this phenomenon instead of being curious about it, where worst that could happen is we discover it's a fake, there's nothing to it. But what if it's not?
So very few people even know about this phenomenon because the media has done a good job.
The media does a terrible job, really.
Yeah. Well, they've done a good
job.
They're
not all like you.
Who don't want it out there. We're still hearing about Doug and Dave and the plank and all that foolishness, but the truth is that it has been obscured very well by the media, and so there are people like you and me in what I can do, trying to bring it out to people. And in general, I think that we are definitely being prepared for the moment of declaration somewhere, somehow down the immediate pike. Humankind is about to be informed that there is an ET presence on this planet.
Well, there's a lot of escalation of information going out that we touch on.
That's right. It's deliberate, and we can see it. And, of course, most of it is frightening because well, we'll get into the politics of that in a minute, but what I think is so important from the crop circles is that people understand that if this is indeed contact, which I plainly, purely believe, from another intelligence, could be even our own selves projected into another dimension. I mean, the possibilities are endless. What's important is that we are getting communications of very high energy, very promising, hopeful, brilliant messages.
Yes, very sophisticated messages indeed. They're not just pretty patterns.
And definitely
sophisticated geometrically, you know.
Exactly. We're getting sacred geometry all over the place here. We're getting coded messages. We're even, you'll remember the Chill Bolton face.
Indeed. And the
with
message,
the disc. You want to talk about that?
Well, sure, we could talk about that. That, you know, if you asked me what was the most startling one ever, it probably was that one.
Me too.
Which was so recognizable and so unique. We've never had anything like it before. I was one of the first people in that one, actually. We had to find it, first of all. I think we climbed, I have pictures of us going, one person would hold the barbed wire up and another person would scurry under. We were, I think, three of us. I had two camera people and myself.
Wasn't it in a military field?
It was by a big radio telescope that was a government.
Right.
Chill Bolton is a big radio telescope. And of course, there were signs, no trespassing. But, you know, they have those all over the place. And we don't hurt anything. We walk along what they call the tram lines, which is where the tractors go. And so you're not disrupting the field. And, well, we're just unruly that way.
we need to investigate.
But I've been in that one on my cell phone. My cell phone fortunately worked, because frequently they don't from the inside circles. And I called the other researchers. I said, okay, this is how you get here. These are the barbed wires you have to go through. Whatever.
You were
and,
in there alone?
No, I was with my two camera people. And somehow, I can't remember how we were given, you know, so you hear little rumors, you hear tips, and then you go, I mean, it's really kind of funny, kind of cute. You go and you're searching and scouting and going up
roads and
down
roads. But that's the fun of being a crappie.
You get on hills and look down. Where is it? Oh, yeah, you can go down this farm road. I see it. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So we had that little adventure with that one. But there we were inside of this parallel to a message that had been sent out in 1976 that Carl Sagan had a strong hand in, where we were just doing a commemorative sort of thing when the world's largest telescope opened at Arecibo in Puerto Rico, and it was the launch.
You're talking about SETI.
Pardon me?
Are you talking about SETI?
Was SETI responsible for that? I just know that a communication was sent out. I don't think that was SETI. SETI does other things. SETI searches for signals.
Are you talking about the disc was sent out with the rudimentary images of a man and a woman holding hands?
No. I'm talking about the parallel to the Chill Bolton formation that came in by Chill Bolton that was sent out binary code, from this 1976 communication. That was one of those things like you put it in a time capsule. What is this civilization? We're the third planet from the sun. We're carbon based. We're this tall. We look like this. And it was all encoded. And if you could draw that pattern out, it had a long rectangle with all these kind of symbols inside that you could interpret.
Right.
I mean, you could, I could, everyone could, if somebody showed you, oh, there's the planetary thing, we're the third planet, blah, blah.
So amazing.
Now, they didn't expect anything to come back. It was kind of like one of those commemorative things.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, here we were in 2001, and exactly the same rectangular shape with a parallel symbols in them that seemed to come from them. So it was 3 foot tall creatures with big heads. It was silicon based. The table of elements was in there. There was a different whatever. I guess that's the silicon based thing. So they paralleled. There were three inhabited planets in their solar system, and it was like, oh my God, you put them side by side, in a way they're exactly the same, but there's a different interior kind of coding going on.
Now, well, do you give people this information in the film? Because this is some of the most, I mean, in some of your materials, you talk about having, how can it be proved that this is real? And I think that that is one of the most shocking proofs of all the crop circle phenomena.
We don't go into that particular formation just because it's too long a story. And you have to be careful in a film. You know, it has to kind of keep moving. So I had such a good one to put in, but you'd have to really explain the whole thing and show the patterns and whatever. We just chose not to do that. But see, now I can talk about it on radio shows.
That's it. Well, tell us about the film more. How does this film differ from the first one you've done, and what surprises are there for people?
Well, this film is my film, as opposed to, as I say, the other one was the filmmaker's film that I just enabled. But that was an objective outside look at the science, which we don't go into in as much detail. And it was, for its day, it was a very powerful film because a lot of the researchers who've given their lives to the phenomenon, really, who gather in England every summer to study it and write about it and photograph it and what have you, a lot of them got turned onto it by that film. They didn't know about crop circles. They saw that film. They went to England, and, you know, sort of the rest is history. But this is an inside film because I'm part of this world, and I can speak very intimately with the people. And my purpose in this film was not so-called to prove anything, although along the way you certainly are talking about how impossible it would be for people to do all of these things. But my purpose was really to expose people to the incredible enthusiasm and reason-based enthusiasm. Why are these people so jazzed by this phenomenon? And you just get a feeling, it's a feminine film, you might say. Somebody identified it that way to me, and I thought, oh, yeah, you're with me. And that's why we call it Inside the Crop Circle Mystery as our tagline, because you're right in the heart of it with the people who care the most, and you'll hear them talk differently than they have in every other sort of more masculine, objective documentary that you've ever seen. And we tried to make it very beautiful. You know, everything about it has a tinge of loveliness and beauty and mystery and, you know. And
you capture the wonder, which is so important. I was there, one of the people interviewed in another film that was probably released at the same time as yours, which is called 2012, We're Already in It, also a very feminine feeling. And what's very exciting is that we have that counter-emotional, intuitive experience in your film and in hers versus that very male scientific analysis. You know, it's interesting, but come on already. I mean, I really believe that one of the real purposes for the crop, I'll get arguments about this statement, but I feel that it's about getting there and feeling what it could be to be in touch, directly in touch in a temporary temple with consciousness from elsewhere.
Well, absolutely. No, we're so kind of cut off ever since Descartes split spirit from matter. Spirit became a very secondary. And it feels like the circles are here to pull us back to this elemental kind of in touch with the earth, being part of the earth, being part of the cosmos, not just living on top of it and abusing it. And, you know, they land always near sacred sites, ancient sacred sites. It seems to be calling us back to something we've lost. It's all speculation, but that is part of my speculation, at least, and what we talk about in the film, which also, by the way, has an hour of wonderful bonus material. I don't know if you've gotten to that. But
I haven't gotten to that yet because I am a little bit handicapped. I've got a computer that is just on the edge of reality.
Uh-oh.
So I had to see your film a little bit at a time and a little warp because I'm in Europe, so I couldn't get the...
Yeah, you're in Italy, right?
To work on my DVD player, but I will.
You're in Italy, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, Italy didn't have any formations until some Italians a few years ago went to England and got very tuned in, turned on, whatever, and went back to Italy and organized some kind of event or conference or what have you, and then circles started to appear in England, which is really typical. They kind of come where they're invited. They're not into hitting over the head sort of situation. That's why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, we probably shoot them, you know? Right. That's, you know.
Like Stan Freeman, who I'm sure you know, when I interviewed him, I said, well, you know, do you think that we're going to get contact? I mean, come on, Stan, what do you think is going to happen when these guys really do come in? And he said, well, if we could just stop shooting at them, we might have a chance for dialogue.
Yeah.
But it's so
well,
true.
You know, I mean, you know, if you are an ET or a committee of conscious beings trying to open communication with this planet, I mean, the first thing you notice is it's a violent planet. Come on. You've got to be scared of those people down there, right?
You know, you
Careful.
Look at like, whew, as
right.
Michio Kaku calls it, a type zero planet where we have not gotten past the self-extinguishing personality and conduct and behavior modes.
Yeah,
but
at any rate, we
are not all, certainly not all human beings are in that mind.
Those of us who aren't of that mindset really come through this, not through being handed something like they land and they say, hello, we'll help you now. But as we try to figure out what's going on and it dawns on us, that if we're really paying attention, wow, this is visitation, then you've owned that. That's part of your being. You know that. You actually know that. You know it because you've kind of, let's say, figured it out rather than some more harsh kind of way of having this delivery that you would resist perhaps, you know. And to me, I think that's so consistent with the whole, you know, as we move into hopefully a bigger, broader perspective of holistic, you know, kind of perspective. I mean, how lovely to do it in, and this is the way that it would happen. It would dawn on us. We would become these different creatures. And, I mean, isn't that just a beautiful way to think about, how the whole process works? There's no more evolution anymore. Humankind has taken over, that slow, billion-year process of, you know, we're genetically manipulating things. We're in charge. Well, how's about we do it in this kind of gentle way that is consistent with the way things can unfold in infinite kind of beauty.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about the spiritual evolution that we're going through and the great shift that we're going through, and everybody's waiting for this big, you know, champagne-popping event that's going to happen on December 21st, 2012, and I'm teaching people as best I can, hey, look around you. Big, giant leaps don't have to be, you know, and it handed to you through the lottery. Okay, it's the day. It's all part of this progress that you make as an individual and then contribute to the greater whole.
It's a very feminine way also to see it, you might say, feminine. But don't we need that, a more feminine way to hold
everything? Well, yeah, and of course the indigenous people are saying it's the time of the female power, and quite honestly, bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah, we're here, Patricia. We'll handle it.
I can handle this. But
really.
It's really very exciting, and it is exciting also to see so many women who are stepping forward now, and like you, and like many others. Even the indigenous people are embracing women, which is so exciting. And there's no question, as you gaze upon a field of wheat. And, of course, excuse me, I interrupt myself here by saying that isn't it, of course, let's call it ironic, that the messages are predominantly coming into wheat. And wheat is, of course, the symbol of the evolution of society and civilization. Bread.
Well, it's our sustenance, right. So our sustenance, you know, is expressing these new things, yes.
Yeah, and that these messages are coming into the very core of human civilization, the very essence of our first real steps in development was bread making, bread breaking.
And isn't it also interesting from that perspective that they're kind of like those Buddhist sand paintings? They're absolutely beautiful, they're complex,
yeah.
They were difficult to create or seemingly so, a complexity to create them. And yet you can't put them on a museum wall. You can't preserve them forever. You can't objectify them and put dollar signs on them. I think, oh, isn't that beautiful? People say, well, why would they do them in wheat fields? Why would they? Well, I think that's why. They're ephemeral. It's very consistent with this kind of sweetness of this evolutionary process.
And the fact that we are trying to analyze why extra-dimensional beings don't do three-dimensional things. In other words, why would they put it in a wheat field? Because it's there.
Mm-hmm.
What better way to project an idea, concept, love, communication to a three-dimensional body of beings than to project into their earth, their fields, an
it's sort of delicious, isn't it?
It is. I love
it. You think
it.
About them like being master.
Yeah, you look, you stand there and you see these gently swaying wheat fields, indefinite to the eye, and boom, there's one on one field, and you look over and you can see another one on another field, and it's just too amazing. And the skeptic,
I mean, the whole planet turns into kind of a museum at that, you know, in that area. You've got a whole kind of gorgeous art gallery.
Because you've got the white horses. You've got all these, you know, Silbury Hill. We had the big Mayan formation right over next to Silbury Hill. So here you are sitting in this crop field of this beautiful Mayan symbolism, and you look across and you look at Silbury Hill, which, of course, come on. I mean, are we not really going to recognize that this is an artificially created mountain right there in the middle of some pretty flat land?
Well, the
so
whole English landscape in that particular area, you can't turn around without falling over some kind of sacred site, smaller ones in Silbury Hill, burial mounds and forts and whatever. It's just astonishing how loaded, and stone circles. I heard some statistic that there are thousands of stone circles in the British Isles, and they, you know, have a certain relationship, geometrically at least, to, like Stonehenge, for instance, to the crop circles. They're very geometrically sophisticated when you actually draw out the patterning of them. And so there you are in very, very ancient, sacred landscape, with this new dimension coming in. There's something very beautiful about that also, kind of calling us back to our roots again.
And, you know, helping us look at the geometries, because I personally, I'm a channel for the Sirian vibration, which is a sixth-dimensional intelligence, and it's all about geometry, which they call cosmometry.
Uh-huh.
So if you talk about the sacred geometry of the area, you've got the sacred geometry in the patterns themselves, the sacred geometric planning of all these stone circles in the region, and, of course, all the energy grids and patterns that are there, which is the reason why these ancient sites were built there to begin with. So you've got a lot of what's being represented is about number, frequency, vibration, geometry.
There is a hot spot over there, and someone in the film says they didn't pick just any spot. They picked the hot spot to come and concentrate. Although they've been in 40 countries, the concentration is in this little hot spot area of several counties in southern England.
Well, definitely the most intricate ones and the highest frequency of these extraordinary images predominate in England in the summer. We've seen them in other places too, but by and large, I have not seen the depth and the intelligence in some of the designs elsewhere, like what I keep seeing in England.
Yeah. So when you think of it like a giant sacred landscape with the ancient sacred symbology and this currently occurring, you know, real time kind of thing added to it now. There's something very beautiful about all of that.
Indeed, and let's not forget to talk about the beauty of what you experience when you are in them. Recently, I usually bring a group every summer because I'm there every summer, and we went into a circle where there were people in deep meditation, and we joined them, and we had the most amazing, we were welcomed into their meditation, and this celebration, it was something like being showered with light. It was like kids running through a sprinkler.
Yeah, beautiful. They do a lot of that sort of thing in the circles. It kind of, you know, it seems right to do that when you seem like you really are in a kind of a temple when you go into a formation. And some people get physical reaction, buzzing and tingling, and sometimes negative. They can't go into one. The energy of it doesn't match their energy. It's not. I'm not very energy sensitive. I'm just. I'm a mental person, so awe is usually what I experience. How can this be? What could have made this? You know.
So how do you, what do you experience when you go into the center of a formation?
Well,
I hate to say
that's
circles
my
because
truth.
It's so,
I'm just struck, I'm just awestruck. It's just so dumbfounding, you know, it jams my brain. What could this be? And it makes me, you know, think about all of this otherworldliness and the beauty that, you know, we really could be experiencing and changing over to and what have you. But, you know, as I say, others are very sensitive to the actual energy. The dowsers have a field day in circles. You could close their eyes and set them walking, and they could tell you, the pattern, the dowsing rods would give you the, every time they walk over, a change of the lay or whatever, they'll get, the rods will tell them. So, you know, there's just a definite vibration going on if you're sensitive enough to pick it up.
So you're saying you don't feel the energies inside?
I don't. No, it's not really my category.
Yeah, it's interesting how we all react differently inside the formations and how some people feel they're strong and then others, like me personally, I'm very sensitive. And I'll go into
a part of your field. What do you feel when you go into them?
Well, my big event was in 1996 when I went into the Julia set at Stonehenge. Up until then, my opinion of crop circles was that they were some kind of UFO, supposed UFO burning marks in the fields. I had no knowledge when I went. And then along a number of events that are outlined in my book brought me into the Julia set back then because I had dreamt it days before. I had seen it. I had seen the formation exactly as it was. And talking to people at the bookstore in Glastonbury, they said, you've got to get to this. This is here. This is now. So I went in, and that was the most shocking experience of my life. And
I wonder if we were in that at the same time, Patricia. I was in that one also.
You were?
Yeah, I was. And then
this
the triple Julia little...
This blows me away because I run into some people in my work that are writing books, that are making films, that were in that crop circle.
Oh, that was there a baby. That was the first fractal, and there's some good chance that it was unique in arriving during the day as opposed to most of them, almost all of them, where you wake up in the morning and you find them. But
that crop circle came down in the daytime within a two-hour time frame, and that has been proven.
Well, nothing's quite really proven in this world, Patricia.
This is true, but we have reports of the plane.
But then we have other reports that seem to... I think it's part of the phenomenon, actually. It doesn't want to be pinned down. And
I
so,
agree with you.
Yeah, that there's always a yes, but maybe because
then... But this formation...
I tried to find that pilot.
The Julia set formation was extremely particular because, as I said, a lot of people were called into that one like I was, like you were, and it was, and they all report that it was the most powerful experience to date.
Indeed. You know, the farmer almost cut that out when it came in. He was really angry that his field had been violated, and then someone fortunately had been up in a plane and already gotten a picture of it and showed him the picture, and his jaw dropped, and... He ended up instead of, and you know, somebody handled him nicely, to encourage him not to cut it out. And he ended up putting up, I think it was the first what they call honesty box where he made people pay to go into it. I believe he made 10,000 pounds, which is much more than he would have gotten for the crop that was destroyed. He was a very, very happy farmer. But that's
I'm surprised to hear he made that much because,
well, that's
that
what I've heard. You know,
that only 5,000 people went into that formation. It's possible, but when I was there, there were almost no people there except a couple of men in black, which is another discussion.
Well, that must have been, it must have been there for a while then, because when it first came in, it was, you know, there were just lines of people going into it. And that was the story that he, you know, I didn't put him on in my film, and which is What on Earth, whatonearththemovie.com, so I didn't interview him personally, and I don't know if that's a true story, but that's what I was told. I was told he made 10,000 pounds.
Well, when I went in, it wasn't when it was first down. I went in it later. And still,
yeah.
The energy in that place was so intense that
yeah.
it just sucked me in.
Right.
It was something
and it's right outside of Stonehenge. I mean, you know, hello, what a good spot.
I know. And that's another thing. Here, I mean, it's one thing to see to question whether some guys got together and made a formation in some obscure place in the back hills of the region. But this is right next door to Stonehenge. And 151 circles in Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy. But when I went there, there was the farmer's wife at the gate collecting the money. And I said, I'm really glad that you're doing this. And she, instead of mowing it down, and she said, we give up. She said, you know, this is bigger than we are. So
uh-huh.
We do appreciate
it. It was very
the
sweet. It was a real turnaround, you know. Please God, the whole world should turn around that way. It was very sweet.
In fact. But it was quite remarkable. There were Tibetan monks and lamas in there. There were Japanese Shinto priests. It was really something awesome. And I've been in crop circles since then, almost every year. Nothing has ever had that kind of impact on me.
Well, it was a turning point circle, yeah. In the, you know, we've had lots of fractals since then, and we haven't had any before that. So it was the introduction of a kind of new pattern group that maybe has been the most juicy of all the pattern groups. Beautiful, beautiful fractal patterns after that.
And it was so funny because I was in a color healing college just before I went in there, not knowing anything about it. And the day before I discovered that I dreamt this dream, we had been talking about fractals. So here comes this crop circle with this just amazing.
Isn't that something that you actually intuited this thing? I'm impressed.
Well,
know,
I dreamt
dream.
It. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't keep the diagram, but we were 30 women in this college in England, and we were doing, well, his name was Theo Gimbel. He was the great father of color healing. And I sat up, it was a college, so I was boarding with other girls, and I sat up in bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Clearly, I was shown Stonehenge with this spiral next to it. And I was told, pay attention, this is an extra-dimensional lock-on point, and you need
wow.
to pay attention, it's going to be important for you. Pay attention. And
well,
I woke up, I took out in the dark, because I didn't want to wake anybody up, I took my pen, and I drew this diagram on a piece of paper, and wrote down what I knew of the dream. And when I went to Glastonbury that weekend, there it was on the wall, my exact diagram.
Oh, that must have been quite a thrill.
It was, and I had witnesses, which was exciting, because the girl saw the diagram, because the next day I went down to breakfast going, whoa, did I have an amazing dream. And so everybody saw my diagram, and I recounted what I had dreamt, because you know
oh,
when you get those
amazing.
Dreams that are beyond normal dreams?
Yeah.
This was like, pay attention. So when we superimposed it on the postcard image of Stonehenge with the spiral, it was to the letter.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Too bad you don't have it.
Unfortunately, when I moved house, a lot of documents went lost.
Oh.
And, but it's got to be out there somewhere with some of these people that were in the court.
You know,
let's talk more about your film. And
okay.
What is the basic thread, then? What are people getting from this document?
Well, they're getting the absolute enthusiasm and why there is that enthusiasm. Of these people who've really given their lives. I mean, they come from, you know, other straight kind of professions, what have you, architects, mathematicians, whatever, journalists, and they discover the crop circles, and all of a sudden they drop their former careers and they turn into people who are deeply enmeshed, turning out all kinds of research and products and what have you. And why? What would cause such entirely intelligent, highly skilled human beings to turn their lives inside out? Well, that's what I'm trying to take you inside of, because I've been part of this whole thing. This has been my world.
Well, of course, some of the skeptics try to say that they're in it for the bucks, which is very offensive.
Hardly.
As far as I'm concerned.
Ain't nobody getting rich on these things.
That's what I try to tell people.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
is
some
not
of them,
the
you
way
know,
to
they
rich.
Felt they sell beautiful pictures and what have you, and, you know, they make enough to kind of make a living, sort of. But, you know, there's no
sort of.
Great tycoons of corporate crop circles or something.
You know, I would say most of them haven't quit their day jobs, if you know what I mean.
Well, indeed. Most of them. But to some extent, they really have turned over a lot of their lives to this. It is amazing, actually, that there really is a sort of community of people who have, in great part, turned themselves over and even left what they were doing before, truly.
Well, I'm one of them. I mean, I got contact at Stonehenge. My life changed completely when that happened. I lost consciousness
inside one of the circles of the Julia set, and 2 hours later, they came looking for me. The people that brought me there, one of the professors from the college, came looking for me. He said, "You've been out for 2 hours."
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Whoa. Well, your lore should really be part of what, you know, there's a lot of lore. Some formations have a lot of stories about them, and those, you know, they're kind of like a body of intelligence that relates to a particular formation. It sounds like you got pieces of that body of intelligence that ought to be in all of our awareness. It just kind of corroborates and adds more dimension and believability and what have you to how awesome these things are.
Well, the book, Cosmos of Soul, the first book, recounts how that happened, and it opens a lot of people to the crop circles because it talks about what happened to me, how come I started hearing these messages, and still today do. So many people have had these kind of life-altering experiences there, and it's just, I love to bring people to the circles because you can talk about them, theorize, imagine, see, but nothing is like getting there, nothing.
I'll tell you one thing that's a little bit parallel to that, which is that, you know, when I'm doing my crop circle thing, wherever I happen to be doing it, because my life is certainly, now that I've got this film, really revolves around the phenomenon, people will come to something I do, and, like, they'll bring their husband, and the husband is a real skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that going in. They don't announce themselves, and they'll just be where we are. And afterwards, they'll come up to me and say, "Well, I really came here thinking this was a lot of malarkey, and now that I've seen this film, I am of a different mind." Now, that happens all the time. You can't watch this film and walk away poo-pooing this phenomenon.
Indeed. It's really very gripping. What kind of events are you doing? Are you doing showings?
Well, all different kinds. First of all, radio shows. There was a musical event here in Los Angeles last week, and I was the guest of honor at it. Actually, I talked most of the time and just showed my trailer. And I'm going to be doing the Santa Clara UFO Expo that's coming up in September, on September 12th. And then there's another showing in the Bay Area on September 13th that's something I think called Sunrise Center up in Marin. And then in Los Angeles, there's going to be a preview showing at a theater, and actually Whitley Strieber is going to introduce the film. He's a huge fan of the film. I mean, when I did his show, his website said, "You have to buy this DVD. It's the best thing that's ever been done on the crop circles." And
good for you.
So that'll be on the 27th of September here in Los Angeles in a theater. If you get on whatonearththemovie.com, you will...
Okay, hold on, Suzanne. Let me repeat that. The website is called whatonearththemovie.com?
Yes. If you don't find these listings, because we're actually, it's a new website, and not everything is, we have some coming soon on it. But you can email me from there, and, if anybody's in Los Angeles, or if you've heard me talk about the Santa Clara Expo, you can look up yourself. If you want to know more about the event in Marin, you can email me. It's Suzanne@whatonearththemovie.com.
I'm envious. You're talking about my old stomping grounds. I'm the San Francisco Bay Area girl.
Are you? Do you know Lori Grace, who produces events at the Sunrise Center?
No.
She's a big, outgoing person who makes things happen. So she's the producer of that event on September 13th.
Good for you.
So, I just kind of move around and, we showed the film at the big UFO Expo, not Expo, Congress. UFO Congress has a big annual event.
In Las Vegas.
And in Laughlin, Nevada, which is a little mini Las Vegas.
Didn't win the Best Documentary Award?
It did. It won the award for Best Feature Documentary. Indeed, it did. 2009.
Good for you.
Best Feature Documentary. And then it was the only film they showed at the X Conference in D.C. In April, which is the group that's advocating. It's a big deal. It's a suits and ties group that, very classy fashion, is advocating government disclosure of all these secrets. And
yes,
I've interviewed them. They sent out a whole press release about come see this film. So, we're doing very well in these so-called alternative world. The challenge is to get it out to the straight world now, and that's what I'm focused on.
How do you get it out? What's your distribution? How do people get it?
Well, this is what I have to do. I want to get it on television. And in the meantime, you can buy it from, you can buy the DVD from the website, which is whatonearththemovie.com. But distribution, so that it's at Blockbuster and Netflix and what have you, you know, that's the next, thrust.
But I mean, if people want to buy it, the only place they can get it is at your website.
Yeah, whatonearththemovie.com.
Or
at any of these personal appearances I make. I always have a suitcase full. And we sell a lot of them, by the way, which is very encouraging. People see the film at these events, and then they come over and they buy it, and I think, well, this is a good sign.
No, it's a very powerful film, and you've done a great job, and you do transmit that passion, the excitement, the sense that, oh, my God, here it is. This is what I walk away with, like, oh, from my own experience there and also from your film. It's just like, here we are. Here we are,
yeah.
World. Pay attention.
Oh, Yay, that's what it should evoke.
That's what we want people. And, you know, so most people can't be realistically get into the circle. So that's what we need. We need films like yours getting people excited enough to go, oh, my God, it's really, this is how I feel. Oh, my God, right on schedule with the Mayan prophecies and all the rest.
Look at Larry King. He's having all these guests who are testifying to UFO genuineness, and you're having official figures like Governor Simonton, the ex-governor of Arizona, I believe, who came out and said, yes, yes, I've had an experience, Jimmy Carter. You know, all
Jimmy
of a sudden,
Carter.
Well,
I think they've got their agenda. In fact, you were talking about the ex-conference, and they're out to force the, well, not force, but definitely encourage the government to come clean.
Definitely.
And, you know, we've got wonderful Tom Carey, who's working on getting some of that precious metal from Roswell and, you know, breaking through that myth that...
Isn't it all this stuff that seems to be testifying to the genuineness of visitation? It does seem to be escalating.
Oh, yeah. I really do believe that it's time. The government knows it. They've known all along that there's life, and they... Well, my beliefs are based on a lot of my own personal conjecture and assumption, but, you know, we do have evidence, so much evidence of ET technology and hidden. And it's time for it to come out. And I think they know it. And they might even have been given an ultimatum. You either announce it or we will.
Conceivably. But also, you know, the deeper we go into the difficulties the world is in, perhaps the more open we are to outside-the-box kind of answers. Since inside-the-box, I think you eloquently described how constricted it is inside the box where, you know, we're not doing too well. So
the only thing that I caution, and I do bring this up a lot, is that I hear a lot of people saying, you know, when are they going to come and save us? And I'm like, hello, we created this dilemma. It's our karma, and we've got to clean it up. So let's get rid of the savior and the messiah mentality and know that whatever assistance we're being given is to help us figure out how to fix it. Let's not get all juicy about the idea of these motherships arriving and all the good people get to go and all the bad ones burn in hell.
Oh,
like,
yeah, those
we've
are
achieved
funny
nothing.
Stories, aren't they? People are so definitive about what they think they know about what's going to happen and whatever. I always say, come on, I like the way you talk about all that. Wait a minute, don't contract around these narrow little explanations and then be attached to them as if you know they're true. Come on.
Especially because we are still in this 3D reality, and we're trying to conceive of reality so far beyond us. So we've got all the paradigms have to go. I mean, we can't expect anything to perform in any kind of way that fits into the box. Otherwise, we'd be already out of here.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, it just behooves us to remain curious and remain open and let what's new come in. And, you know, at some point we may just be saturated enough with overwhelming evidence that all of a sudden you can't deny it anymore. You know, it becomes too thick to deny that there's more to reality than what we are acknowledging in this little 3D world we live in.
Indeed.
But I think the trouble we're in is really helping with, will help, is helping with that.
Well, sure, because for starters, people are having to let go of the material. It's so symbolic, it's almost funny. losing the house, losing the car, losing the job, everything that we believed represented security is gone.
Yeah, the stability is gone, so now what? Yeah. And then, of course,
your own spiritual advancement, your own personality, how you cope with these things going has everything to do with how you embrace the new coming in.
Well, even the fact that you really realize you have to embrace it because the evidence is so overwhelming, then what are we going to do? We're going to turn to one another to say, what's going on? What is this outside ourselves? How do we handle this? This is an issue between all of us and the other. And wouldn't that be a good way to kind of pull ourselves into or be pulled into an alignment? Because once humanity is aligned, we can be a lot better at handling all the issues we have instead of when we're in dualistic oppositional thinking where the patterns that we're in just continue. You know, we need to
break
these
you're
patterns.
Right. We really do sound similar. I love what you're saying. And I do share with people this idea. Just remember, when you finally got it, when you're looking up or wherever it is you're looking and you're seeing the truth coming toward you, beings, forms, however that's going to manifest, presenting. And, you know, suddenly that Arab-Jew conflict, that Protestant-Catholic, that Muslim-whatever, all of that goes in the wonder of what? Suddenly
right,
it's a human
how much
human
bigger
time.
It all is than these petty ways in which we are so destructive to one another, really.
Well,
the
7 billion people is to keep them in separation, and the best way to do that is religion and politics and race.
Well, it's all the entrenched systems that really started with Descartes, you know, and splitting spirit from matter, and we are the consequence of that, and that's our gears. That's the way we're geared. You know, I like to recommend a wonderful book that I think I bought about 1,000 copies of. Nobody who knows me has escaped reading this book. It's The Universe is a Green Dragon. Do you know that book?
No.
By a physicist.
Did you buy all the copies?
I'm the biggest customer, believe me. It came out in about 85, I think, and Brian Swim is the author. He's a physicist, a mathematical cosmologist is what he calls himself. And it's The Universe is a Green Dragon, a cosmic creation story. And it's a story of, it's really in the lineage of Teilhard de Chardin. And it posits this living universe that started, let's say, with the Big Bang, and it's still banging, and we're at the edge of it. We are the intelligence that can reflect upon itself, and we've taken over from evolution, so we better do a good job since nature isn't the boss anymore. And you just get filled with this, it's a brilliantly written book. That just, you're so touched by it and so moved by it and so moved by what you are as a human being that is, you know, so gorgeous and privileged and what have you. And you kind of been moved to kind of be responsible. And, I mean, nothing I say about this book can do it justice. It is so incredibly beautifully written.
Well, thank you for recommending that. And I do want to add that I'm not sure I agree with you on nature isn't in charge anymore. You wait. See what she does, old Earth Mother.
Oh, well, yeah. I meant in that evolutionary sense. You know, we're billions of years for incremental change, and now we've got, you know, all of our genetic engineering and what have you. We have co-opted that evolutionary process. That doesn't mean nature's not going to slam us. I didn't mean that.
That's right. All right, listen, everybody. We're at the edge of our hour. We've been listening to Suzanne Taylor. She's got a great new movie out, What on Earth? Oh, my God, Suzanne, I lost the subtitle. Inside the Crop Circle
it's
Mystery.
It's the tagline, Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. But
your website is
whatonearththemovie.org. .com.
.com. How rude of me to not get it right.
Well, that's good. The more we talk about it, the more we're getting into it. That's good.
Listen, people, you got to see this. It is so exciting. And, you know, I'm always going every summer. You know, we just came back, had a wonderful time getting in and out of those formations.
Make a date over there,
experience.
Patricia.
Huh?
You and I have to make a date over there. Come on, I didn't know you were there every summer.
I know. How come we just miss each other? This is just
I don't know. Well, maybe we didn't miss each other, but we didn't know each other. So maybe you and I were rubbing elbows and we didn't even know it, you know?
You know, you're probably right. We're both sitting there looking up, looking out, going,
yeah,
well,
I mean,
okay, I'm all for making a date over there with you, Suzanne. I'd love to share it with you.
Okay, beautiful.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Suzanne. We'll have her back on. Suzanne, before you go, what's up for Suzanne? What are you going to do next?
Well, as I say, there's a theater showing in L.A. on September 27th. Suzanne at Water.
No, I mean after this project.
Oh, after this. Oh, I'll never be finished with this. Are you kidding me? I don't know how anybody ever even makes two movies, even though I'm executive producer of a previous one, but I'm filmmaker of this one. It is overwhelming how much there is to do. I can't see beyond this movie.
I hear you.
But
you know, the more you do, the more they give you to do. So I'll be checking in with you
though,
and see what you're up to next pretty soon. All right, everybody, gotta run. Thank you, Suzanne. It's wonderful to finally make contact with you. I hope it's the beginning of a long and profitable, and I mean that emotionally, relationship. Guys,
I look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Okay, keep telling everybody I've switched to Saturday at this hour, 10 a.m. Bring your friends. We need you to tune in. I've got people here like Suzanne talking about what's happening on this planet and sharing with you as much as we can. That place, which I love, outside the box of convention, soaring with the eagle. That's what it's about, my friends, Beyond the Matrix with Patricia Corey. The website is www.SyrianRevelations.net. Check me out, and don't forget my new book, Where Pharaohs Dwell, One Mystic's Journey Through the Gates of Immortality, is going to be out soon. I can't wait to share it with you. So stay in touch. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. I'll be with you next Saturday. Arrivederci.